obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name is Ron and I'm a real alcoholic. First and foremost, I'd like to thank God for my life at this precise moment, just the way it is, just the way it is. I always give thanks to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous for being here for me, and more importantly, for being free, because I don't know where I would be today had anybody stood at a door and said, man, you need 15 cents to walk into our meeting. But it's a great possibility that I probably would be in prison for the remainder of my life. There's also a possibility that I would be dead. But the scariest one of all is there's a greater possibility that I could still be out there just existing. So I'm forever grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous is free. I want to thank the South Bay Roundup Committee, Dave, and the rest of you guys that has given me this honor and this privilege to come up here for a few minutes and share my experience, strength, and hope with you. I'm the first one to say that I don't have no magic Google dust. I can't touch you on your forehead. I can't turn nothing in the back of your ear to get you sober. But what I've learned is, as long as I continue to do what I'm doing now, it helps me to stay sober. I asked my sponsor many times, what do people get out of what I share? And he simply said, stop trying to figure it out. Just continue to let God use you. Before I begin, it's a couple of things I really want to say. I've been to the South Bay Roundup several times without registering. It's an honest program. But during those times that I came up to come into a speaker meeting, I didn't have the money to register anyway. But what I've been doing for a long time is talking about the South Bay Roundup. Because it was at the South Bay Roundup where you guys had a glass case back there in one of these rooms, and you had the archives of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got a chance to see an actual picture of Bill W. and Dr. Bob and Ebby Thatcher, and I even learned that the guy that they talk about in the beginning of the big book who died by the musket or the pot or whatever, that his name was Thatcher too. And I ran back over to our side of town and I said, I learned something. But what I'm really saying is, if it hadn't been for the South Bay Roundup, there's some things that I wouldn't even be able to talk about now. So I'm grateful. I love that flag, banner, parade. I've never seen that. Even though my home group is not from your area, not from your district, a lot of my peers from my home group have shown up tonight. And so I'm gonna wave our banner so we can make some noise too. 9604? Okay, now the banner parade is complete. To my new friends. If you don't feel that way about your home group, if you don't feel that your home group is the best meeting in the world. Maybe, just maybe, it's time to go find another group and wave a new banner. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, but my home group, 9604's Alano Club, Thursday night Broadway meeting, is the best meeting in the world for me. And if you don't feel that way about your meeting, something is wrong. I have the best sponsor in the world. But if you don't feel that way about your sponsor, something may be wrong. Maybe you need to come join our family. Last but not least, those little youngsters in ROTC, those honor guards, I went over there and thanked them during the break and told them, do not give up. They were up here disciplined. And I knew that the only young lady that stood with them was not an alcoholic. And how did I reach that conclusion? She stood there with that flag on her face. A real alcoholic would have shook that flag off because we got to see what's going on. And to all of you veterans, to all of you veterans, to all of you veterans that came up front, I was denied the opportunity of joining the armed forces, not because of a criminal career, not because I was an alcoholic, but because I've been a chronic asthmatic all my life. I made it as far as APHES. And when I got to the physical, that's where they denied me. I've always had an interest in the military. My father was a vet. My brother is a vet. But now that I look at it, it may be a good thing that I didn't become a vet. Because alcoholism did something to me. I'd have been out here selling bazookas, grenades. Y'all would have looked up, it had been a tank coming down to 105. Do you know how many half a pints I could have got for a tank? That's enough of that. No, one more thing. I met a guy in here tonight outside, and I believe his name was Jeffrey. Am I saying it right? The one that I asked to be my sponsor? Are you in here? Am I saying his name right, Mike? Jeffrey. Jeffrey was on fire outside. And Jeffrey walked up to me and my buddy and he introduced himself. And he said, yeah, man, this alcoholic stuff is good, man. I love it. I love it. And I said, me too. And he asked my buddy, he said, how long you been sober? And Mike said, oh, 15 years. Then I asked him, how long you been sober? And he said, 3.5. And then he asked me, he said, how long you been sober? And I said, I think it's about 19 months. And then he said, do you have a sponsor? I said, no, but will you be my sponsor? And he snatched my name tag. And he said, Ronald, I'm here to help. And he said, have you been through the steps? And I said, not yet. And he said, I was about as old as you when I decided to go through the step, so we can do this. But what he didn't know is, I would like to make an amends to him. Because I'm gonna start this off by saying my sobriety date is September the 13th, 1993. and I've been sober 19 years. And I do have a sponsor, which is the greatest sponsor in the world, and that's the man that I love, the man that has guided me on this path, the man that has allowed me to bump my head and fall down and get back up on this broad highway. Because I don't know where some people get that the road get narrow when the book tells me that it's a broad highway. Just don't fall over the edge. And that man just happens to be Leon Strange. I have a home group. I have a support system, but it was nothing like that 19 years ago. In 1993, I was no longer living. I was just existing. In 1993, I had lost everything. And when you hear me say I lost everything, I'm not talking about the apartment or a house, the cars, the bank account, the credit card, the jewelry, the woman, the kids, all of that stuff had been gone. When you hear me say I lost everything, what I'm talking about is I lost something that comes from way deep down in here, way deep down in here. And 19 years later, I don't even know what the name of it is, but what I can honestly tell you is that it's been replaced by Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not even trying to figure out what the name of all this stuff is, but it's been replaced. See, I lost that stuff that made me love and care and respect my own mother. I lost that stuff that made me love and honor and respect and care about my own father, my siblings, my children, the people in my community. But more importantly, I lost that stuff that made me care about me. And how do I know that? Because Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a menu, gave me some suggestions, gave me some directions, gave me a set of spiritual tools that if I use them, I can learn to look at me wholeheartedly. And that's what I've been able to do. In 1993, I found myself living in vacant houses in Watts. I was living in this house, I'm not gonna say living, I was existing in this house that didn't have no doors, no windows, no locks, no running water, no gas. It was pissy mattresses scattered throughout the house. And all my friends were junkies, intravenous drug users. They shot a whole bunch of dope. My friends had big abscesses on their neck and abscesses on their arm and their legs. And they had deadly viruses and bacteria and diseases. And it wasn't uncommon to hear one of my friends say, I just found out I got hepatitis, tuberculosis, HIV. And some even confess with their own tongue that they have full-blown AIDS. And I would watch them take a sip out of one of them bottles and they would pass it to me. And as bright as I am, as educated as I thought I was, the best I could do was wipe off the top with my dingy shirt and drink right behind them, thinking that would keep me from catching one of them infectious diseases or deadly diseases. But for the grace of God, since I've become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been fully self-supporting with some of the best medical benefits that one can dream of, and I've had countless of physicals, and God spared me from catching any of those viruses, bacteria, or diseases. The cold part about this is, and the true reality of all this is that these was my real friends. These was my real friends. See, I didn't get loaded with people like Dave in the Hawaiian shirt. Oh no, I didn't get loaded with people with names like Johnny Mack. See, I got loaded with people like Big Titty Linda. Rashy Deborah. Killer. And these was my real friends. Earlier today, before we got to this point, you guys recognized a young lady in here, and you said she was working with the youth alcoholics. And every time I see our young friends come through these doors, I have to say to myself, how? Where was this program at when I was their age? It was here, but I wasn't looking for it. But I want to compliment her and encourage her to keep extending her hand out, just like the old-timers continue to extend their hands out to the ones that want the help. But in 1993, man, being at my wit's end, and let's not get this confused. To our newer friends that are sitting in this room, because I'm talking about the sordid conditions that I've been brought from, it does not necessarily mean that you have to go as far down the scale as I did. See, because some of y'all may have that illusion that, oh, I wasn't as bad as him, so I don't have to stay around this program. I didn't go as far down the scale as him, so I'm not an alcoholic. That's not true. I know you listen at my story, and you may say, damn. But on the flip side, I done heard some of y'all stories. Well, when I got here, I had a fender bender with the Mercedes. My accountant called me and told me I spent a little too much last month. Do you know I received a cutoff notice and I had to run down there and pay it? And I sit in my seat and I be like, damn. Did you hear what they said? Because if you still had all that stuff, you could have came to Watts and met me, and I'd have showed you how to get rid of it all in one day. But when I made it to Alcoholics Anonymous and I got involved with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there was something, a page that I found in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that fits this right here. This page didn't even have a page number, but it had a bold title. And it said they stopped in time. And there's a couple of sentences in the bottom of that page that says this. It says, if you learn to listen to some of us like me, or in our category that have went a little further down the scale than you, we may be the ones to help save you infinite years of pain and suffering. So you don't have to go as far down the scale as I did. And then here go the flip side of it, and a lot of people don't like me when I say this, but I'm gonna say it. Those of y'all that still got the things, when your ass relapsed, why do you go outside the fellowship and sell your stuff? Then if you be one of the ones that make it back, you want to come up here and share about it. I sold my Mercedes Benz for $300. to the crack man. Why you didn't sell it to somebody in Alcoholics Anonymous? You'd have got right money for it. 400. I've been coming to meetings long enough. I've been coming to meetings long enough to hear people say things like, remember your last run, because your last run is probably your worst run. But I've been sober long enough to look back at some other runs to find that to be untrue in my case. My last run was not my worst run. It just wasn't. My last run, I found myself physically sitting on a curb. I had about a sip of alcohol left in an ENJ bottle, ENJ brandy bottle. I had some of them party favors that go along with my alcohol. Pocket full of cigarette lighters and none of them had a top. I saw one of my real friends, one of my lifelong friends that has never talked about me or talked down to me, and he was on his way to work. And he was walking to our Metrorail Blue Line station. And as he walked on the opposite side of the street, he was staring at me, and I was staring back. And it was about 5:30 in the morning. It was real cold, and I was comfortable. And the reason I could say I was comfortable is because nobody was shooting at me this particular morning. The Hispanics wasn't chasing me through the alley with bumper jacks calling me Mayate this particular morning. I had to get sober to find out what Mayate meant. So don't try it by the coffee pot, because I ain't that well yet. The police didn't have a perimeter set in my neighborhood, and with the K-9 dogs going from yard to yard this time. But I was sitting on that curb and I was comfortable. I wasn't messing with anyone, it wasn't anyone messing with me. And when he got directly across the street from me, he turned and he faced me. And he stood there for about 2 minutes and he just stared at me. And I stared right back. And though he never said a word verbally, he began to shake his head from side to side. And it was his body movement that spoke louder than my mother's tears. It was his body language that spoke louder than my father and his pistol had ever spoke. Because see, contrary to how I started my story off, that's not how I started my life off. You heard me tonight say I'm from Watts, and the reason I say I'm from Watts is because Watts was around long before they started using the term South Central. I was born in Watts. I lived in Watts. I got loaded in Watts. I gangbanged in Watts. I went to the penitentiary from Watts. I returned to Watts, I got sober in Watts, I'm back in Watts, and I'm helping other people in Watts to change their life. But contrary to what you may be thinking right now, I come out of a housing project. I had a mother and a father in the same household. My mother went to school to be an educator, and after she got her teaching credentials, she decided she wanted to be a nurse, and she went back to school and she became a nurse. She never did get into teaching students, but she's always taught her children. My mother worked for 41 years as a nurse. for the County of Los Angeles before she retired. My father, the biggest and the best man that I've known, the humblest man that I've ever known, worked for 39 years. He retired. But they did something in the early 70s that was kind of unheard of in the black community. They got us out the projects and they got a house built from the ground up. And they moved us into a brand new home, a four-bedroom home. And I'll never forget that day when my mother stuck that key in the door and she said, go in there and pick your bedroom. Whichever bedroom you pick, that's your bedroom for life. A lot of my friends are here tonight, and when I'm away from a podium, my nickname is Cartoon. And they don't even know how I acquired that name, but I'm finna let the world know how I acquired that name. My mother, she had a ritual. See, my mother, she believed in education. She always had us in books, just like I do my daughter today. It's not just about Facebook. No, it's all about chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5. I don't care what you say. Let's move on to chapter 6. We got out of school. No, let me just say this. I would be sitting in my class doing my schoolwork, and out of the peripheral of my eye, I would see all the students' head turn and I would look to see what they was looking at, and there would be my mother in the back of the classroom talking to the teacher. I don't care. I want him to have homework on the weekends, holidays, 4th of July, St. Patrick's Day. It don't matter. Homework. Every day we got out of school, we had that ritual. We had to get out of the school clothes and put on the play clothes. From there, we had to go to the dining room table. We had to do our homework. My mother took it a step further. After we did the homework, she had a book laid out for us, and we had to read a chapter and then explain what we read in that chapter to our mother, who had already read the chapter before us. She took it a step further. After we read the chapter, we had to go to our separate little spaces, my brother and my sister and I, and we had to have this 30-minute quiet time. So that clapping y'all did for 1 minute for the vets, that'd have killed my mother. And we had to sit there for 30 minutes quiet. And if we said a word, then our 30-minute time started over. But at this time in my life, I'm getting up in age and the guys are starting to knock on the door. And I don't know about nobody else, but I was too embarrassed to tell the guys when they came to the door that I was doing my homework, because I never heard them say they was doing homework. I never seen their mother come to the school. Why I had to be the weird one? So I would go to the door and my mother would say, tell them you cannot come outside right now. And I would go outside and I'd say, hey man, I'll be out in a little while, man. They said, man, what you doing? Man, I'm watching cartoons. So eventually when I would come outside, because I could only stay out till the streetlights started blinking, they would say, here come Cartoon. But the difference is, today, I can read and write. Today, I didn't have trouble pronouncing words like intuitively. Anonymity. And they can't. And it's all because of my mother. It's all because of the discipline that my father them had. We got the stuff every holiday, Christmas, haircuts every 10 days, the new bikes and all that. But they believe in discipline as well. We get the Hot Wheels and the Hot Wheel tracks for Christmas, and you best believe by New Year's she was beating our ass with them orange tracks. And I'm sharing this portion of my life with my new friends because you may be thinking, had you grew up like me, you probably wouldn't be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm-mm. It's not true. It's not true. I remember there was a time when I was getting drunk and I used to have crying spells. And I don't know what phase you call that. Because I was a gangster. And I'd be out there just crying. And how the big book say you emerge remorseful, you know, and I find myself remorseful. And I should say some stuff like this. You know what? If I was white with blue eyes and blonde hair, I wouldn't even be like this. I beg to differ. Looking around the South Bay Roundup. Now my question is it just one of y'all that was standing up there in Pacific Palisades somewhere saying, if I was black with brown eyes and an afro? It doesn't matter because we're here. And what I've learned since I've been sober and going through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a sentence that say, alcoholism is a respecter of no one. So it don't care where you come from, what color. To my new friends, let me help you out. Let me help you out. It doesn't matter what color it is that you drink, white wine, red wine. It doesn't matter if it's 80 proof, 100 proof, or no proofs at all. It doesn't matter if it comes in a can or a bottle. It just doesn't. What I've learned to look at is what happens once I put any of it in my system. I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I stand up for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm like those in the big book that will fight against, any sentiment changes. That's me. But now I have to step away from the old timers for a split second, remaining in the singleness of purpose to help our young friends. I still keep my ears to the streets. And to my newer friends, the younger generation, what I had to find out for me is, if I don't take a drink, I'll probably never take an ecstasy pill. If I don't take a drink, I'll probably never suck on a Xanax tablet. If I don't take a drink, I'll probably never be picking my face off that crystal meth. If I don't take a drink, I probably won't smoke no Primo. If I don't take a drink, I'll probably never hit a crack pipe. If I don't take a drink, see, a lot of y'all is thinking because I take a sip and put it down and I go to this other stuff that I'm not an alcoholic. But what happens is that if I pick this up and I take the sip and I put it down, I go to this other stuff. When that other stuff is gone or I'm too geeked up, I go back to this to try to balance out. So that's what I had to find out for me. And I'm staying within the singleness of purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's just to help our younger friends understand. It's not about how much you drink. It's about what happened to you when you drink. And at the end of the night, at the end of the night, at the end of the night, when everything else is gone, what do I return to? That hot beer that I left on the counter. Why? Because I'm an alcoholic. I hear so many of our new friends, especially coming out of the treatment centers, and they think because they got abandonment issues, that's what makes you an alcoholic. No, that just means that nobody wasn't there. I got molested. That ain't what made you an alcoholic. That just means that some sick individual was looking for love in all the wrong places. What makes me an alcoholic, what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, I lost the ability to enjoy and control my drinking. See, there used to be a time I could go to the club and I can order a Long Island iced tea. And when that record come on, I was just like you ladies. Hey! But that was in the beginning. That wasn't in the end. Then something happened, and I don't know what happened, but then I go to the same club, and next thing you know, I'm on top of the pool table. All the security guards got me surrounded, talking about they finna jump on me if I don't get off the table and out of their club. See, I used to be able to go to my family reunion, and my family loved to see me coming. I talked about everybody, my grandmama, my auntie, and we had fun. It was all humor. But something happened. I hid behind one of them trees, and I took me a drink. I come back. The humor done turned into insults. You know damn well you ain't cooked that cake. Anybody that wear a wig like that, Auntie, they ain't cooked that cake. You went to Raff's and just got some frosting and put on a Raff's cake. I stopped being invited to the family reunion. They started meeting me with a plate with aluminum foil on it. Then something else happened, and I don't know what happened. Then I started hearing that they had our family reunion 2 months ago. When was the family reunion? Oh, it was in April. Nobody told me. They wasn't supposed to. That was written on the invitation. But let me get back to September the 12th, 1993. Because see, we got some new friends in here, and I know they haven't gotten to that phase of their development where they can really open up. And I want to talk to that new friend that's hurting like I was once hurting. I want to talk to that new friend that's crying on the inside. Though we can't see the tears, we know you're drowning in them. I want to talk to that new friend who you know you can't go out in the lobby right now and get on the phone and call your mother because she don't want nothing to do with you. Your father, your sister and brother is treating you like a gangbanger. See, I'm talking to that person that's still hurting. You done lost your significant other. Not behind fornicating or cheating or none of that type of stuff, but behind what happened to you when you take a drink and you think you'll never get them back. See, I'm talking about that system, man, and you know you done lost your kids to the system, but you can't open up and tell nobody yet. That person that's been terminated from the third job and still don't know how to tell the family. I've experienced that type of pain, man. And I don't wish that hurt on nobody. And if you're the one that I'm talking to on this part of my message, let me share this with you. Until you can find you a closed mouth friend, until you can find you a support group, until you are able to open up, you're gonna continue to feel that pain. There's nothing unique in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you keep coming back and you learn to open your mouth, and I'm not going to say always run to the podium, because what a lot of our new friends, the mistake that you're making right now is you think that you're supposed to run up here and share everything that's going on in your life, and then you want to say, you want to leave me with this. I'm going to dump it on y'all because I don't want it. What in the hell makes you think I want it? We learn to share in a general way what we would like, what happened to us, what we like today. All this old stuff. How many times you done heard this one, man? And this is that treatment center stuff.
My drink of choice is.
Your drink of choice? Where the hell did that come from? You must not be a real alcoholic. I hated wine from the moment I started drinking till I became a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't care about your sherry. I didn't care about your satapubong. I didn't care about none of that wine stuff.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
But I tell you this, 3 o'clock in the morning, when the cheat was on, here come James. He hit the corner and he got a gallon of Galio. Once he released his grip, we usually ended up fighting because I didn't want to give it back. But I tell you, to this day, I hated wine. I hate it. And what I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous is that I lost the power of choice. So how can I come behind one of these and sit up here and try to convince the world that my drinker's choice was, I like to say what my friend always say, it was more. More of anything that you had. But September the 12th, 1993, 5:30 in the morning, when my friend was across the street, and he stared at me. And he stared at me for about 2 minutes. And when he began to shake his head from side to side, he turned and he walked down the street, continuing his journey. And he continued to shake his head from side to side. Something happened to my life that morning. And I didn't have a clue as to what happened until I became an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. What happened to my life that morning is that I had a moment of clarity. What is clarity? Clarity is nothing but some clear thinking, some sane thinking. I'm not going to do a big book study from up here, but what I will suggest, not only go through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, but also get a dictionary and look some of these words up. Because some people just get up here and all they're doing is repeating stuff that they've heard other people say, and you're just a parakeet. I don't run with cliques. I do. I run with a big old clique called Alcoholics Anonymous. Why? Because I looked it up. Spelled both ways. And the definition of clique was a group of people that work well together. Then there's a little dash and it say, sometimes except in public. But in this room right now, we working well together. So I'm part of this clique. Things that I used to say when I was newer, I just don't believe in them now that I've had some living sober experiences. But that morning, as my boy walked on towards the Blue Line station, God in his infinite wisdom, and I like to say it was God in his infinite wisdom, did for me what I couldn't do for myself. He started impregnating my mind with some thoughts that I hadn't had in a long time. And the very first thought that came to my mind was a real simple thought. Man, you used to go to the movies every week. What happened? And I didn't have an answer. Man, your mother used to be proud to tell the world that you was her oldest son. And now she have a chain and a lock around her gate to keep you off her property. What happened? I didn't have an answer. Man, your father used to tell all his co-workers and your uncles he was going to make sure that you had a better life than the life he had in Louisiana. Now when he hear you in the neighborhood, he stands on the porch with his pistol. What happened? And I didn't have an answer. Man, you had a woman that swore up and down that she loved you and that she would never leave you. And now you can't even remember her middle name. What happened? And I didn't have an answer. And these thoughts went on and on and on. And I just happened to be sitting catacorner from a church. And I remember looking at that church. And I looked atop the church and there was a steeple with a cross on the top of the steeple. And I remember staring at that cross. And I don't know what happened that morning. But I got up. And I stood in the middle of the street. And in the past 19 years, I've become a praying man. I've had many living sober situations that has caused me to pray and pray and pray and believe in prayer. And to this day, I don't think that I've ever said a prayer that was so sincere as the prayer that I said that morning, that early morning, September the 12th, 1993, when I stood in the middle of the street in the heart of Watts and I looked at the sky, and with everything in me, I said, if there is an MF God, then please help me. And I've never forgotten that prayer. Never. And since I've been sober, so many people have tried to get me to incorporate their prayers. But I remember what was the first prayer that I said for me that worked. These prayers may work for you, but I know what worked for me. God, he allowed me to remember a phone number. And what I did is I got up off that ground, man, and I made it to a phone, and I called this lady, man, a little old white lady that I had met some years ago. And she knew about the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. She knew about Al-Anon. And the cold part about it is she has never taken a drink or a drug in all the days of her life. And in 1993, she had been attending meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous for 27 years. She had gotten herself a sponsor. She had went through the steps. And she's the one that made the big book come alive in my life. When it says our way of living has its advantages for all. This lady is a professional lady right now today. She has millions and millions of dollars, and she's made it clear. Cartoon, I may be a millionaire, but I'll never give you a dime. But I'll teach you how to be self-sufficient. Now that's priceless. And over the course of time, listening to her, my finances have went up, and then with my mismanaging, went back down. And then they go halfway back up, and then they go back down. And I found out that's just living. Her and her colleagues had a friend that was a real alcoholic, and they physically tied him up one day and took him to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And like Houdini, he got untied and he left. Shortly thereafter, he died. But that night, her and her partner heard something in the meeting, and they continued to come back. And in their travels, they've been to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings on every continent where Alcoholics Anonymous is. But I was allowed to remember her phone number. And what she did is, she said, why don't you go to the meeting that's up the street from where you are? I said, a meeting? See, this is my first time around. I haven't had the pleasure of going in and out, in and out, in and out. So I don't have to come by and tell the lie that some of the members tell around here. I had to go out. No, you didn't. I'm not going to subscribe to that one. I understand that you went out, but you didn't have to go out. I ain't going to buy that one. She said, if you go to the meeting, it starts at 8 o'clock. Somebody is going to be at the back door. They're going to greet you. They're going to give you some cookies. They're going to give you a cup of coffee. And they all understand. I don't know why, but that night I showed up at the meeting, a homeless person, no teeth in the top portion of my mouth. Y'all want to speak? I thought I was talking about me. but I love my crew from 9604. And what happened was, I get to the meeting, I weighed in at 169 pounds. I hadn't had a bath. Some people, they can count the days.
Oh, I didn't bathe in 3 days.
3 days? Man, we talking about maybe years. But I was a wreck. I was a wreck. I wasn't living, I was just existing. And I made it to the meeting and I walked in. Nobody hugged me. I've been going to that meeting for 19 years. Nobody's given me a cookie. Nobody brought me a cup of coffee. But God in His infinite wisdom was in charge, because I walked in a meeting full of total strangers and I sat in a seat right here in front of the podium. And it was that night that I heard my very first message of Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a brother that was alive at that time, and his name was Josh. And Josh truly believed in tradition number 5, carrying this message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Because the coldest part about it is, I'm sitting in a meeting and I'm suffering, and I hear them when they say that, carrying this message to the alcoholic who still suffers, and I think everybody else is suffering except me. Because I'm always seeking out and searching for a loyal companion, somebody to be worse off than me. And what Josh did is, Josh stayed on point, and it appeared that he had a spiritual awakening as a result of some type of steps. Because he was truly carrying a message to me that night. Why? Because when he talked about the penitentiary, the way that he talked, I knew he had been to the penitentiary. When he talked about his mother didn't want nothing to do with him, I felt that, because my mother didn't want nothing to do with me. But then in the middle of his pitch, something happened. Because of my mother and her persistence with our education, I knew that the word was, it was past tense. This stuff used to happen. And in the middle of his pitch, it switched to, this is what his life was like today. Now he's taking care of his mother. Now he had keys to his mother's property. He hadn't been to jail. He was working. He was fully self-supporting. And in my very first meeting, I remember asking myself, what is he doing differently? How come he can live like that and I can't? And it was after the meeting. It was after the meeting. That's why when I come out here to some of these meetings in South Bay, some of y'all done asked me to come out and speak. Some of y'all know that I done showed up at some of y'all meetings out in the South Bay. And it's one thing that I love about y'all out in the South Bay at some of the meetings that I've been to. Hey, Ron, you're going out to dinner with us afterwards? You want to go drink some coffee with us afterwards? Because we don't see a lot of that in South Central like we used to when I was new. But I still do things like that. After the meeting, they wasn't so eager to jump in their cars and leave. Because in some of these meetings, they need to take it out of the format. If you feel the need to share, talk to someone after the meeting. Everybody be gone. I want to talk. Anybody seen Dave in a Hawaiian shirt? But this particular night, these men stayed back. And they made a circle around me. And what they kept saying was, he's one of us, he's one of us. Now I remember I'm a gangbanger. I remember I'm an ex-con. And I got the audacity, no teeth, 169 pounds, to look at these men that want to help me save my life and look at them and say something as insane as this. I ain't one of y'all. Y'all ain't from my hood. And they kept sharing their experience. They kept sharing their experience. They kept sharing their experience. And I now know 19 years later that that was the night that I surrendered. They made a phone call. I was able to get into a treatment center. It was a treatment center that reintroduced me to Alcoholics Anonymous. We had to go to the meetings. And I continued to go. The Mary Lynn Choir sung today. I loved everything that they sung. They did the doo-wop dip and came all through here like active alcoholics, you know, in a club, but they were sober. But in 1993, when I was in this treatment center and I was in our choir, they was our arch rivals. So how do I look at them today? I mean, I'm sober, I done did amends and all this, and I still clap for them, but I ain't forgot that part. They would never outblow our treatment center. But y'all was pretty good, you know. I'll just leave that one alone. <laughs> 38 days in this program without a drink. I heard a lady talking about sponsorship, because at that time I was saying to myself and others, I'll never get a sponsor. Ain't nobody gonna tell me what to do. But a lady got up here to Bleeding Tradition number 5. And the way that she talked about a sponsor was nothing but a friend and a sponsor solution to the problem that I still had. And I wasn't afraid to walk up to that lady after the meeting and say, can I talk to you? Because I'm not one of them that's gonna just totally agree with women work with women and men work with men, because I've read that nowhere in the big book. And being one who has kind of like read the big book, studied it some, been a few places, if Abby Thatcher brought the message to Bill W. and Bill W. brought the message to Bob, Dr. Bob and Bob W., I mean, Dr. Bob and Bill W. took the message to alcoholic number 3, Mr. D., Mr. Dotson, then somewhere down the line, one of the men's talked to a woman. Hello. I asked this lady, could I talk to her? And I said, could you tell me what a sponsor is? She said, a sponsor is nothing but a friend that has found a solution to the problem that you still have. And I say, what, getting loaded? And she said, baby, that's not your problem. That's only a symptom of your problem. I said, no, that's my problem. Getting loaded, that's my problem. She said, no, it's not. And I said, it is my problem. She said, it's not. And I said, how are you gonna tell me? I'm going to meetings every day, I'm drinking coffee like I'm back in the penitentiary and I'm in a treatment center, it is my problem. She said, no, it isn't. I said, so what's my problem then? She said, it's real simple, baby. You just don't know how to live, punk. You know how sometimes you think you heard something? And I know this lady did not just call me a punk. To my new friends, I advise you to learn how to respect the old timers around here. Some of the old timers around here may not be as active as they once were. But without their work and their diligence, these doors probably wouldn't have remained open for us. So I'm not the one that you can come to and disrespect an old timer in any meeting that I am. I've heard some idiots around here, some babbling idiots, call some old timers worthless old timers. And I'm talking about, I got so angry. Then you got the newcomers that come in and they want to sound profound and say things as idiotic. What word I'm looking for? Stupid. They say things like time don't mean nothing. And what I like to share with you is get some. Because what comes with time is memories and experiences. See, the people that raise their hand and they've been here 29 times, if you sit down and talk with them, they can tell you about the troubles they had at year 5. And they can stop you on the new committees from having those or making those same mistakes. I love the old timers around here. When I went over there and got with my man right here in the wheelchair right here,
You know what? I seen how his wife was looking at me, too. She looked at me and she said, well, he young and vibrant. Then she looked at him and she said, but I love him. And I was like, damn. Trying to get me one, man. But the old timers, man, I tip my hat, I applaud you, and I bow to you. Because I wouldn't be here today. But back to this lady, and I'm gonna close this up too. But back to this lady, she said, let me ask you a couple of questions. And I said, okay, ask them. You can ask me anything you want. And she said, who do you pay your mortgage to? Is your name on a lease? What utility bill has your name on it? Who do you work for? How many employees do you have? Are you current on your child support? When is the last time you spent some quality time with your children? And every question that this lady asked me, it felt like she had a knife in the center of my gut, turning it real slow. I felt every question that she asked me. And for the first time in my overgrown ass life, I realized that I didn't have nothing. And then she hit me with the ultimate question. When is the last time you sat at a dinner table with your mother or both your parents and just had a decent conversation without getting up from the table saying, Mama, you gonna still let me have them $3? And that one heard it. And I asked this lady, because she helped me find a sponsor, and she walked me to my sponsor that evening and introduced me to Leon Strange Mason, who has become the best sponsor in the world. At 38 days sober, when I approached him and asked him, he asked me, where was I living at? And I told him I was in a treatment center. He said, get what you can out of the treatment center, but what I'm finna introduce you to is the program of recovery that we use outside of the treatment center in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor was up of utmost service with this gentleman right here. They was running together. Ralph White is sitting back there, his best friend. They was all running together. And what happened is he cracked open a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for the first time in my life, I got some clear-cut answers as to why I say, man, I'm finna go around the corner. I'll be right back. I'm going to get me one. And it took me days, weeks, months. And in my case, going back to prison, it took me years to get back. I finally got some answers. I learned about something that I never knew existed, something called a progressive illness, the disease of alcoholism. I never knew about that in all the days of my life. I found out how it operates. It starts in my thinking, and it tricks me. It makes me even forget that I just got shot at last night, and I better not go back to this neighborhood, but it'll tell me something. The guy that shot at you, he moved to another state. It's okay to go back around there. It makes me forget what alcohol has done to me. And it tells me it's okay, it's gonna be different this time. And then once I take a sip of anything, it's no longer this up here no more. It becomes my body. See, it's my body that says, I don't care what you have to do. Go jump in a car with another man. Go rob your own mama. Break in your neighbor's house. You better snatch that old lady's purse. You better snatch that wallet. It's my body. That study tells me this. And get me another one, punk, while you at it. And my mother's tears couldn't stop that once it got started. My daddy and his pistol couldn't stop that once it got started. The pastor up the street at the biggest church, he couldn't stop that once it got started. A judge with his mallet that sent me to the penitentiary, he couldn't stop that once it got started. The SWAT team, nobody could stop that. Then I found out it was coupled with a spiritual malady. Man, what the hell is that? And it was only one thing that can conquer that, man. And that was God. And by going through the steps, what I like to say in the short version is that I came in and I understood powerlessness over alcohol. Because sometimes you hear people say, I'm powerless over people, places, things. Well, I'm powerless over alcohol.
My mother has always been powerless over people, places, and things. But she ain't selling a TV to try to get with some more people, places, and things. I'm powerless over alcohol. I came to believe in a power that's much greater than myself that has restored me to sanity. But before I could even think about looking or defining sanity, I had to look back in my own personal life and look at some insane stuff. Because people that are sane, they don't walk in the middle of the street with fire trucks behind them and sirens on and just drinking, saying, he better go around. Same people don't get drunk knowing it's time to get your kids out of school. And you say, well, somebody else will get them. That's why you sign them emergency contact cards. When I got restored to sanity, God gave me something else back that I had lost before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. He also gave me back my power of choice and my free will. And it's with my free will and my power of choice that I choose to be here today. They asked, I could have said yes or no. Make sense? I hear a lot of people say, well, I ain't done nothing. It's been all God. Well, I've done a whole bunch since I've been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It ain't been all God. God gave me my choice back, my power of choice. He gave me my free will. People just said in the meeting the other day, God gave me a brand new car. I went outside to see what was me. Did I ever bent me in the parking lot? With my power of choice, with my free will, with some guidance from my sponsor, listening to you people in Alcoholics Anonymous, seeing the pretty cars out there, seeing the nice slacks, seeing the nice ties, seeing the Hawaiian shirt. I sit in a meeting and I say, I want some of that. I listen at your story. God didn't just give it to you. You tell me how you get up and you go to work every day. I'm so grateful that my sponsor told me real early, you can sit your ass around here and play dominoes all day long if you want to. But it's going to come a time when you're going to meet a young lady around here and she want more than a value pack meal from McDonald's. Forget the young lady. It came a time when I wanted more. Then my sponsor told me, he said, jobs never come looking for you. You got to go looking for them. So I got out there. And guess what? I started putting applications in. And I got a job, man. And I was making like $6, $7 an hour or something. Then once I had the job for a while, I wanted to start complaining. And it took my sponsor to say, but didn't you tell me you was making 17 cents an hour in prison? No, well, this $6, $7 ain't that bad after all. So if you want more, you do better. So I go to school. I got in school. I graduated from school. I resigned from that job and got another job. Resigned from that job and got another job. I worked my way up. The reason I got a car, because I got tired of members in Alcoholics Anonymous lying to me, tell me I'm going to come pick you up, and they never show up. You make it to a meeting, we'll get you home. So I start saving my money, and I got a car, and that's the way my story goes. I've been through the 12 steps. I stick around to help countless of others. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. One thing that I'm clear on, Alcoholics Anonymous don't owe me nothing, but I owe my entire life to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been able to travel and go to conventions in other states and other countries. I was just telling Sharon back there, her friend, I got a couple of stamps on my passport. I'd rather have a passport than to have a booking slip. So I'm going to say this in closing, and I'm gone. Dave, my time up, right? You say you're going to let me know. Huh? That's what happened, man. You let an old timer around and get a damn... Let an old time Ronnie get a damn coin from a mayor and they think they running some shit, you know what I mean? Dave, you didn't have to say that, man. They recording me. It may be somebody in here with time, and I'm not talking to the new friends right now. It may be somebody in here with time, and you may be looking at where you are right now, and you may be saying to yourself and some of your friends that you ain't supposed to be here right now. Your life isn't supposed to be like this. It's supposed to be just like it is right now. The last 2 years of my recovery, the last 2 years, has been the best 2 years of my life, of my recovery. Last 2 years of my life, wake up one day, and a woman that I truly love didn't want to be married no more. And to those of you that just do booty calls or you getting them 90-day relationships, you'll never know what it's like when you married. Because it seemed like they was the ones trying to always give me suggestions. This too shall pass. You know? But I was in a committed relationship for 14 long years. I was a provider. I was a man. During the same time, I come outside and I'm a homeowner now, but there's a big old white piece of paper glued to my door, said foreclosure. During the same time, my job packed up and left and didn't take us with it. I found myself without an income coming in, any type of income, for 10 months. I also became a single father of an infant baby girl when I was 4 years sober. And me and my daughter had never been separated. And because my life was getting so out of whack, chaos, and confused, I'm grateful I have a sister that said, why don't you send her to Texas, let her go to school out here for a year until you start getting some balance in your life. Some guy that has never been to my family reunion took every dime that I had saved up, even took my income tax check. Some dude called himself Uncle Sam. I ain't never knew him, you know. My whole world came crashing down. My sponsor best friend is sitting over there. I isolated from the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was crying on the inside every day, as I was smiling on the outside. My whole world had crashed. I had to turn in my truck because I could no longer afford it. I lived in my house for 13 days with no lights and no gas, and I was just devastated because I've never been like this since I've been sober. Everything. If you'd asked me to pray, I couldn't muster up a prayer. If you'd asked me about God, I forgot God existed. If you'd asked me what color was a big book, I wouldn't have been able to tell you. Fetal position, I found other positions way different than the fetal position. I stopped eating, I stopped sleeping, I started sleeping. I was throwing up everything. But I never stopped going to meetings. Never stopped going to meetings. I wasn't sharing as much. I was still doing what I could with my sponsees. I got a sponsee that's sitting over there right now, and I never forget the day that he drove up on me and he said, hey, Sponse, you have helped so many people, man, and I want you to know I love you. And he had a sandwich, and he broke the damn sandwich in half and gave me a piece, and I ate a piece. And he'll never know what that day meant to me. But it was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I heard a lady share five simple words. And those words were, let God sort it out. Let God sort it out. And what I had to look at is, as long as I was trying to fix things, baby, 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 please, I was pushing up. I almost called her name, man. But I was pushing this lovely lady away. As long as I stopped talking to the mortgage company, I was giving them the right to move forward with a foreclosure. As long as I stopped getting up, making the necessary phone calls to go back to work, didn't know I was looking for them. But those five words, "let God sort it out," did something to me from a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'd like to share with you today, the divorce is still pending, and I don't care, because I love me just enough that I don't care if my wife loves me or not. It don't matter today. I got another truck, like the one that I gave back, but this one is paid for this time. I've been working, and I'm scheduled to go back to work in the next few days, working the TV and film industry. I made a decision to bring my daughter back from Texas, and she's been back like 5 days now. The lights are on, the gas is on, and they no longer are putting foreclosure notices on my door. And we was able to work out an agreement, a reasonable one. And what I'd like to share with you, for those that are in the position that I came out of, don't give up. Don't turn your back on Alcoholics Anonymous. Don't stop going to meetings, because just like I heard those five simple words that gave me hope, maybe you'll keep coming back and you'll hear the words that give you hope. And I pray and I pray and I pray that you heard something from me tonight. I want to thank the South Bay Roundup once again for giving me the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
This recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.